welcome to the Minevate King Podcast, episode 332. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hello, another week in Minnesota tech land.
And Phil Wilson in his echo chamber.
From the bathroom here. Yeah.
And where are you again?
I'm actually at the BuzzFeed office. So Engine has a highlights conference that they put together for Sport Engine users, and I'm headed over to that, which is across the street from here. So I thought I'd do the podcast from here and then shoot over there.
Would that be Sport Engine?
Sport Engine, yes. They're not Sport Engine anymore, though, Graham. They're Engine.
Are you kidding?
No, they've always been.
When did they announce that?
They changed that like three or four years ago, didn't they?
So are they branching
not
out?
Not that I've heard. They just had a big open house with the big, huge Sport Engine logo in their lobby. So
yeah, I guess you're right. I guess, there is Sport Engine, but Engine was, I thought, was the name of the company now. But the Sport Engine might be the product.
It's the name of the technology.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Are they going to use that for other verticals besides sports?
I think that was the plan at some point in time, but I'm not sure. Mm. I may be all full of shit now. I don't know.
I have never heard, but Steve's talked about that, but I don't think they've ever announced anything like that.
Well, my bad.
Have they, Steve?
No, I don't think so. I haven't heard.
Well, that's it then. I'm just going to have to stop using it.
Yeah. Let's stop talking about them and writing about them.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so let's jump into some stories here.
Stories?
Yeah. So what about the Minnesota Venture Conference? Graham, you get a lot of retweets on stuff that you were putting out.
Yeah, I was there live tweeting that, baby. I had no idea how I was going to do it till I got there. And then I thought, well, I'm too damn far away to shoot photos of the speakers. So I just shot the page in the book that for each speaker. And the presenting companies, there were like 16 companies that did 7-minute pitches and some really good ones, you know, several that we've heard of before.
Yeah.
A lot of med tech and healthcare, but others, you know, like Vidku and so forth that we've all heard of. But it went really well. 7-minute pitches, and then each of them had a table out in the outer area, and then there were umpteen other smaller, earlier stage startups that also had tables that got to do 1-minute pitches. And that's hard, but some of them were quite interesting. It's a little hard to do a pitch in 1 minute, but some of them pulled it off. Others didn't. And, you know, there was a full house. I'd say it had to be between 300 and 400 people. So good event.
Wow.
It's now run by MHTA. And my funniest first tweet, which they corrected me on, is it's the Minnesota High Tech Association, but the first keynote was about popcorn. Boom Chicka Pop.
Okay. Oh,
which is a great story. But it's like, this isn't just a tech event. We have to remember it's, even though it is put on by the Minnesota High Tech Association, it's about all kinds of ventures. And that happened to be the first keynote speaker.
Yeah.
So anyway, we covered food and healthcare and drones and, you know, video and everything imaginable that day.
Wow.
So lots of
lots going on. So our pals over at Amation,
yes sir,
have just announced
Minnesota tech land going strong.
Yeah, mass layoff at its Oakdale headquarters.
This is not good.
No. Well, you know, we've talked about it a lot, Tim, especially when they sold off that Kodak imaging product line that they've been trying to raise cash for a long time, and I've been waiting for them to go out of business for several years.
Well, they're well on their way now.
Yeah. It's been a death watch, shall we say. I mean, this story won't go away. You know?
I know.
Yeah, they're high ranking executives like their CFO and others also part of this thing.
Yeah.
Ooh, so this is across the board. They're going to wind down TDK. So there goes your
which they really should have done about 10 years ago.
Well, I'm going to have to stockpile them now for my reel to reel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What am I going to do? I need some cassettes.
What am I
going to
do for my mix? Where am I going to get my mixtapes now?
Yeah. What about my old 8-track in the truck?
Well, you know, I used to buy VHS bundles. You know, they used to do these 5-packs.
Yep.
And Oh, that's bad. Scary stuff.
Sign of the times.
Yep, yep. Well, so what else? Graham, you talked a little bit about healthcare. What else is going on in healthcare? So it looks like Lee Schaefer did it again. He's got a great article in here about healthcare innovation shifts to IT, not devices.
And is this guy? This guy's kind of I mean, the opening statement of the inevitable fall off in medical device startups. I'm not sure I understand what that means.
Yeah, well, I thought that medical devices were on a big upswing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's because it's like medical devices are not going away. Are we going to just stop developing new devices? No.
No.
Yes, we need. Well, yeah, we'll need IT to support it, but the devices aren't going to go away. What the hell.
Yeah. Well, so Yeah, he highlights hypnosis and a few others that we've talked about in the past that are more of a smartphone play. So,
yeah, but those are that's data sharing. That really has nothing to do with pacemakers and things that keep you alive.
Well, have you guys heard about this Dose Medical, which is a startup here? It's basically a pill box that has some smarts built into it.
And so you make sure you take your meds.
Right, you take your meds at the right time. No, I think it's a good idea because there's a lot of senior citizens that this is exactly what they need.
Oh my God, you have no idea. Yeah. My dad had pills that he had to take 6 times during the day. Yeah. And so my sister and I would go over there. We'd take shifts and we'd break up all his pills and put them in different slots, and then he would set a timer. And when the timer went off, he'd go up and take his meds. Well, as he got more and more ill, there were times when he just didn't want to get up and take them. I mean, and then he'd forget. The timer would go off. He'd say to himself, I'm going to get up in a little bit. And he wouldn't do it. And this device takes care of that.
Yeah. So this came out of the U. So we'll have to stay tuned. To see how they go. It looks like they're going into some sort of trial. But yeah. Getting back to the story, I think that Lee is just highlighting more of these types of things that are less device and more either smartphone or some sort of a utility that's outside of the normal device market, which is this area is known for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's a shift from med devices to healthcare IT, and you're referring to the column that Lee Schaefer did.
Yes.
Yeah. But there's no shift. It's not like medical devices are going to stop. I mean.
I agree with that.
That's the assumption that I can't quite figure out.
He went a little overboard in that column. It's like, wait a minute, the medical device. Industry in this state is not going away anytime soon.
Exactly.
But so it's a dual thing. It's another track sort of coming on locally. And, we address that a lot at the mini analytics event coming up. There's a ton of things going on in healthcare IT and healthcare data. It's all good, It's more Minnesota Tech.
Well, so I was quite pleased with another development after I got done rolling my eyes, thinking, "Who cares about the Apple Watch?" About the Apple Watch being available at Target, so it's now at Apple stores, Best Buy, and Target. And so, I rolled my eyes until yesterday. I went to Target, and I walked in, and they have completely reset their electronics area, and they have. Like little showcase areas for different product categories. And I was actually very impressed.
Wait a minute. As a junior officer of the Apple stock ownership police, yes. Those with Apple stock those with Apple stock are not allowed to roll their eyes at any Apple story
That's true. Yeah. Well, you're not seeing me carrying my pom poms around right now, so I've actually got them in my back pocket.
So you're saying they've kind of reset the display. The electronics department, and they're now showcasing more of what we would consider high end tech or Apple tech.
Yes. And better cameras, so they've got more models of digital SLRs and so forth. And so what that told me was that Target is going to take a real aggressive directional stance in digital. The phones were more laid out and all kinds of stuff. Hey, speaking of phones, by the way, while I was walking around looking at all of these Samsung devices that were running their self-running demos, I looked at six different Samsung phones. Every single one of them had screen burn-in from the demo.
Oh boy.
That's not good.
I've never seen that before. Every one of the phones, every one of the Samsungs, not the Huawei's or the HTC's or any of that, none of them had screen burn-in, just the Samsungs.
Yeah, I think the Samsungs are using OLED still, and those are very... God. They're very vibrant screens, and they take less power, but they are subject to burn-in.
Wow. So, yeah, it was bad. I thought, man,
it's not never... good. Not good when you have a welcome screen that's up a lot, because that's going to, geez, that's not
Yeah, they should have. They should have thought about that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Wow. Yeah, well, those phones have, Samsung phones have never been known as being really great pieces of technology. They hold great pieces of technology, but I think the phones themselves are kind of flimsy. So
yeah, I mean the tech under them is actually really good. But the build quality is terrible in comparison with Apple or HTC.
So I'm impressed by the HTC phones.
And I haven't spent any time with the Huawei phones, which I know that they're the ones building the Nexus 6. Is that right?
Correct. The new one, the 6P.
The 6P. So
I don't
Huawei
know what the P stands for, but anyway. Okay. You could be right. You see Julio's story about Ergotron branching out?
Yeah, this was actually... I like their stuff.
Yeah, I want to get one of those Hub 24s. I think that's cool.
Everybody listening right now, the Ergotron is the company that makes stands and monitor lifts and desks, all kinds of different things that are ergonomically correct. And they've announced a new line of Ergotron home standing desks. But then they also have these Lift 24 standing desks, so you can put it on a counter. They also have one that they showed, and we'll put a link in the show notes so you can see the article by Julio Ada Zapata. But the Hub 27 is kind of a board for notes and all that kind of stuff, but it's got a wall mountable and it's got a desk on it. I think this stuff's pretty clever.
Yeah.
The Hub. I think that the desktop, the raising desktop Ergotron thing, the stand-up desk piece, that's the same thing they've already got, but they painted it white, so it's really not anything different.
But it's for the home.
But it's for the home because it's white. The thing that you're talking about, the wall mount piece, I see those all over the place in doctor's offices. I don't think this is new and revealing technology. It's interesting. I mean, I think it's kind of a cool concept, but I don't know. Do you think that there's really a big market for them just to focus on home?
Oh, I do. Absolutely.
And if you were focusing on home, wouldn't you use a better wood for the desktop and make it a little bit more furniture like? Rather than just painting it white?
Well,
I don't know. These are more egalitarian design. It reminds me of IKEA stuff,
Yeah, right.
True.
Yeah, but even IKEA, it's different wood grains, as real as they be.
Well, so here's what's really interesting. So we just got done, for one of our businesses in the home furnishings industry, we just got done doing a builder's survey on the kinds of things that builders are building in now into new homes, new townhomes, new condos, and the new luxury apartments that are popping up everywhere. And the one thing that's kind of interesting is as there's a bigger and bigger push for first and second ring suburbs and also urban area development, is that the square footage is continuing to drop. And one of the things that they're doing is they're building in standing workstations or workstation areas because people don't have space for desks. And actually, it's bad for you to sit down all the time at a desk. And they're putting these stand-up desks with high stools for you to sit on. So you can sit down if you need to, so you're not on your feet all day. And I thought that was pretty interesting as a direction, as a trend with home building. So I think Ergotron's onto something here.
I think they are too.
Yeah. Interesting.
It might be a little pricey, though, compared to what you can get at IKEA.
Very much so. Yeah, it is.
Well, what other top tech stories are going on? I know that the whole ad blocking thing is huge.
Oh my God.
So I thought that this story in the Wall Street Journal was sort of motivated by that, to talk about how websites are changing their ads.
Exactly. And so just to catch everybody up that's listening, Apple announced that they were blocking or making it possible to block ads in Safari in iOS 9. And it created a huge backlash in the industry. Well, the problem has been is that it's not just advertisements. It's the advertising, federated advertising companies that deliver ads to all these other sites. And they don't just deliver an image that you can click on or a video that's embedded. They're also sending out JavaScripts that actually have functionality and all of that. Well, it turns out that as certain advertisers reach their limit on a given site, then it goes to the next tier of ads, and then the third tier, and the fourth tier, and the fifth tier. Well, that by the time you get down to the fourth and fifth tier ads, a lot of times there's malware in the JavaScripts. And so it's creating all kinds of problems. And now even the New York Times, who said they're their own worst offender too, did a study that over 50% of the payload of, you know, all these top websites, and they listed a bunch of them, is all advertisements.
Yep.
And so it's bad. And I think the outcome seems to be, based on this article, that the major media companies are starting to say, let's not have this crap in there. So we're not going to allow we'll just go first, second, third tier. We're not going to allow fourth and fifth tier ads to appear. And they got to go back to I'm sure they're putting pressure on the federated ad networks to go back and police what the hell's being delivered. At least I hope so. It's the only way they're going to survive, don't you think?
It's getting very bad, so something has to change, and there's so much tracking going on, and as consumption moves from the desktop or the laptop to mobile, it's going to be a huge issue, because a lot of these news websites, they make all their money on ads, and if many users are blocking them, they're going to start to not make much money. So they've got to solve this problem.
So my son, for his birthday, he just turned 21 yesterday. Mom and I bought him an iPhone 6, a 6S, 128, because he's always gotten the hand-me-down phones forever. And so we decided we'd get him a nice phone and so forth. Well, anyway, I looked at his consumption, and he's at 14.5 gigs of consumption. I go, what the hell are you doing? He goes, Dad, when I'm down at the U and I've got some downtime, I'm watching videos, and you know, he's watching stuff on Netflix and all that. And thank God we have unlimited data on AT&T, but oh my gosh, it's incredible. But
getting back to this this ad blocking thing, I discovered an interesting new podcast that explored this recently. Have you heard of the podcast This Old Marketing?
No.
it's pretty good. It's
Bob Vila.
Bob Vila involved. Yeah.
They aren't it's a take on that. It's the guy Joe Paluzzi, who's sort of the self-appointed content marketing guru, you know, that does books and keynotes everywhere, and it's him and some other dude whose name escapes me, but they're up to episode number 98, so they aren't touching us for frequency yet, but it's a pretty well-produced podcast, and their latest episode is Apple is spurring on the next generation of advertising. And I actually listened to this whole podcast this morning. It's an hour, but the point that I got of it is this is going to be the second coming of native advertising, where you just blend it right into whatever you're doing and like on podcasts and so forth. And it's not recognized as real advertising. Yeah. So the blockers can't block it. So yeah,
it is recognized by real advertising by the user, but it is unobtrusive to the user. And that's what most users understand that there's the trade-off for free content, and that is advertiser support. However, if you make it unobtrusive, and BuzzFeed has been very good at that for years, and is one of those companies noted in this article, along with Vox and Vice, and that are avoiding automated ad sales, with third parties. That is the key. I mean, I think that BuzzFeed, that's where the success has come for BuzzFeed, and understanding that user experience has to come first. And I think it's the secret sauce, and a lot of companies are finding out, hey, this can work. It takes a lot more work. It takes a lot more effort. It's a lot more difficult to find out how to contextually build ads within content than it is just slap a banner on it. But I found this interesting, this quote inside this article in the Wall Street Journal from Jonathan Mendez at YieldBot, that at some point all these publishers will capitulate to ad tech or they will not have ads. It's like, boy, there's an arrogant statement if I ever heard one. No, that's not how it's going to work there, Jonathan. I hate to tell you this. I think that ad tech is going to have to evolve, and it has to become more creative. It has to be more seamless, and we can do that. We're a very commercialized society, especially in the U.S. So we, there's advertising everywhere.
Well, and here's what's interesting. There's been a lot of in content advertisements with podcasts. The guy that comes to mind is Leo Laporte, who will go off for multiple minutes talking about a sponsor and how he uses the product, and then others will chime in on the podcast. Yeah, I do too. What it reminds me of is seeing a PBS special on sort of the genesis of television and how things came to be and all that. And they talked about Arthur Godfrey.
Oh, sure.
And I'll put a link to a Wikipedia article about him. And this is what made me think about it, is the fact that he did it first, where where he would be talking and all of a sudden he would say, and when I get hungry, I love having Lipton soup. And he would lift up this glass and he'd put the soup up and he would start to talk about it. But the way that he did it was so perfectly integrated into the show, and he became just huge with Lipton tea and a bunch of other sponsors. Well, here was the funny thing. As I looked at this article last night, in 1953, New York TV personality Steve Allen was a last minute replacement for Godfrey. And when it came time to deliver the live commercial for Lipton tea and soups, Allen impulsively prepared the soup and tea on camera and poured both into a ukulele. And then he shook it up and he played a few damp notes while reciting the rest of the commercial. And that made him a national celebrity overnight. And he became the first host of The Tonight Show. I thought that was just a
I think you see that. You'll see that again. That is starting to happen on a more regular basis, especially in late night television, where you know with hosted late night talk shows and things right. like that. You're going to see more integrated advertising. I mean, I think if one of the big ones is you know if you look back on the integration of Arby's into the Daily Show. Now you know John Stewart always took Arby's as you know this sort of you know brought to you by Arby's, where you know you basically get grease on a bun or something like that. And
right.
You would,
right
he
right.
would always take the negative stance, but they spun that into some great success. And Letterman started doing it. You'll see it on Fallon. You'll see it on a lot of the late night talk shows now. Well, they're just integrate that advertising right into the process. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how that continues to grow. But you know, when we were doing a lot of research in the podcast world, when I was at ADM, we found that integrated advertising, you know, advertising that was host-based, that was whether it was live copy or integrated into the discussion, was always much more accepted and much more acted upon. You would get action by that, because it basically it comes from a source that you're interested in. It's not just slapped up on the site. I'm still amazed at how many sites deliver pop-up ads and things like that.
Well, I've also seen there's been so many shows that one of them was, I can't remember the name of the show now, but they did ads for Nissan. And one of the lead characters, she drove a Nissan sport utility vehicle. And so they would get in the car and they'd start to take off and you know, somebody be on the passenger side and say, "Oh, this is cool. I mean, how do you turn on this music?" And she said, "Well, you just do this, this, and this." And he said, "Oh man, it's coming out through all the speakers." I mean, it was clearly a commercial right in the middle of it. I mean, I thought it was cheesy, but
I've always got a kick out of the comedians in cars getting coffee at the Seinfeld.
I like that. I like how they do that.
And they're always saying, you know, "Hey, wait a minute, there should be a product placement around here somewhere."
Yeah. Oh, there it is. And they walk by an Acura. Yeah.
"Have you seen a product placement around here somewhere?"
Say, by the way, in this latest episode of This Old Marketing, there's a local advertiser they welcome to the show. And it's a company called BrandPoint. So that's another interesting thing I found when I just discovered this podcast this morning. And you know, they basically did a whole native advertising segment on them.
I do need to mention
if you're gonna listen to this new podcast, please give up another podcast, not ours. Just keep coming back to us.
Well, and so, I do need to mention that I'm right at the moment I'm drinking a refreshing cup of Pete's coffee, medium roast.
Brother.
Anyway.
Close the topic off, though, I dropped this New York Times article in, and one of the aspects of this ad blocking is that it costs you money because it's consuming data, and it also consumes battery.
Yes.
Huh. There you go.
Very important.
And I'd like to note that BuzzFeed is at the bottom of this table of news websites. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What do you mean at the bottom?
Well, it means that it's more efficient than, say, Boston.com, which takes 30 seconds to load. And consumes
33 seconds.
It consumes a ton of data, too.
Yeah.
So the ones at the top here are this terrible hogs.
Well, see, what Boston.com does that is just horrible is they will download an entire streaming video. Now, there's no audio playing, but I went and looked. And they download the video, and the video is like 6 megs or 9 megs or something. And so that thing is streaming as you're looking at the site, even if you're on mobile. And it's like, I mean, come on, guys.
It says that it's consuming the equivalent of 32 cents of cell data.
Oh,
each
my
time, gosh. Each time you load the site.
Unbelievable.
Whoa.
Well, speaking of advertisements, I've been really, really pleased with Hulu. They have a new option for $12.99 a month where you get no commercials.
Yep.
And so that really piqued my interest when I saw this article in Bloomberg about Amazon banning the sale of Apple and Google streaming devices. And Tim, you're really close to the whole streaming adventure, and I mean they don't you think this is a big deal, that this is a problem?
Well, it's as I think I tweeted this out. It's the ecosystem wars have begun, and sure. It looks like Amazon is not going to support Apple TV or the Chromecast, which they currently don't, and they could, they especially Chromecast, because Chromecast is totally wide open and any developer can add it very easily. So they're doubling down on their Fire TV. And yeah. They want people to consume Amazon content on Fire TV.
But you know what? I mean, I love on the Roku having Amazon
Prime Video.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then you kind of have, you know, we got an Apple TV and a Roku hooked up to the media center. And and so we can just choose, because we have Acorn TV. We love the British stuff on Roku and... And it's great. So,
yeah,
I hope they don't take that off.
Well, yeah, and I'm wondering, and I've seen conjecture about this, is how long can Amazon not have Prime Video on Apple TV? I mean, you know, the day could come where they have to give in, you know?
Yep.
Well, I was surprised by this because they're everywhere else. They're on the TiVo. Yeah. They're on my Samsung TV with a crazy little app. They're on my
Sony Blue Disc player. They're
all over the place. And I know that Apple TV, you know, before now, they've probably been blocked by Apple because Apple had to approve all those apps. And there are reasons why Apple wouldn't want that. But on the case of Chromecast is a very open protocol, and they could have just added that to their app. Because they have Amazon, the Amazon Video app that's now available, at least on the Android side. I think it's also on the iOS too, right? So they have that. Why don't they just add the ability to Chromecast it? Maybe they thought that the experience wasn't great, or I don't know.
But. Well, also on their new cheap tablet, if you stick in a SD card in the slot. And you happen to have ebooks on EPUBs and PDFs and things like that, it will not open them.
Huh.
So that was a problem. I'll try to find the link and put that in the show notes. But, you know, Apple had a couple of interesting things happen. One of them is they acquired a speech technology startup, Vocal IQ, a UK-based company. And I there's a lot of conjecture about they're going to beef up Siri and Siri. So on, but here's the punchline. I wonder if this also is going to fit into their streaming TV strategy and the HomeKit stuff for home automation. And
sure,
I mean, it'll be
why not?
Yeah.
You know what the most interesting thing about this technology is? It remembers your last question, and you can correct if Siri doesn't understand what you're saying. It'll like. You know, help you, it'll help find what you want based on, you know, or if it didn't understand you, it, but the whole concept of remembering your last question, that's something none of them do now. Cortana, Google Voice, Siri, they don't do that now. That's going to be a huge thing if it works.
Yep.
Which it must, or Apple wouldn't have bought them.
Yep. Well, hey, I know, Phil, you got to scoot pretty soon, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I got about five minutes, so I just wanted to just give you that warning.
Phil's at an event.
I was actually you know, trying to do that quietly without anybody necessarily knowing. But yes, Steve, I do have to leave.
It's because, you know, we.
Thanks for telling everybody.
Everybody's going to wonder why we don't hear about Phil's cool thing of the week later on.
Well, that's true.
Right.
I suppose.
Yeah.
That's an inside job.
Well, we'll help you out.
So, Phil, what do you think of El Capitan?
You know, I haven't done anything with it yet. I mean, I keep hearing Steve having problems with it, and I know some of the other guys here in the office have been on the beta for El Capitan, and it's just it's been a little bit of a struggle. So I haven't spent any time with it yet.
Well, it's been great for me. It's the only kicker has been the discovery that there's no driver for the M Audio Fast Track Ultra, so I had to go buy a new box. That's why if everybody was listening, this recording is challenged because I had to totally revamp the recording stuff last night. I did not get it done. So,
and you were up till at least 1 a.m. on it, it looked like, from your emails.
What a crazy maker.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is, don't upgrade macOS if you're doing podcasting or anything like the video or audio or image intensive.
Yes.
You know, wait for all the drivers to come out, which is usually 6 months or so.
Ooh, that long, huh?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm still on Mountain Lion.
Huh. Yeah. Well,
I'm going to jump to Yosemite pretty soon, but I'll probably stay in Yosemite for a year.
Steve is now right now. You can probably talk about this because people can hear this, Steve. There's some sort of snapping, or it sounds like somebody's slapping somebody's ass. I don't know what's going on.
Is that you, Phil?
No, I'm
okay.
I'm
all alone. I admit it.
Oh,
I was slapping something.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about something really snappy, which is Google I/O.
It wasn't really Google I/O. It was just they had an event.
They had an event. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. New Chromebooks. Right. Or what? Can you recap it, Tim?
Well, they came out with the new phones, which probably everyone is the most interested in.
Yep.
So they have the 6P, which replaced the 6, which is a monster phablet, which I'm looking at, which is made by Huawei, which is a Chinese manufacturer. So that's one. And they also came out with a budget model, the 5. I'm not looking at the notes, so I don't know. I think it's the 5X, something like that, which is their smaller phone, which looks interesting. And I believe that one's made by Motorola. And then they came up with a really interesting thing, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, which is called the Pixel C, which is an extremely expensive Android tablet, which like the Pixel, the Chromebook Pixel, which came out a few years ago, is completely overspecced for their current version of the operating system. So I have strong suspicion that the Pixel C is going to be sort of a Trojan horsey kind of a product that will probably get very interesting with Android 7. They're about ready to release Android 6, which is also called Marshmallow, shortly. And of course, it'll run that. But it's very reminiscent of the Microsoft Surface tablet. So it has a full keyboard, and unlike those, the Surface and the new iPad Pro that are made out of like a cover. You know, it's a cover material, like a fabric.
Yeah.
This is actually metal, so it's a very durable looking thing. So it's interesting to see in it, but it's super expensive. So it's kind of a question whether or not a lot of people are going to buy it.
So what do you think about this article about Stage Fright 2.0 for Android, this malware, this huge bug? Do you think this is going to be a big problem, even in this new iteration?
Well, it is, because it doesn't depend on Google pushing the fix. It depends on all of the carriers and all of the manufacturers, all the OEMs that make Android to do it. So my phone isn't protected because the manufacturer hasn't pushed a fix for it. So I have to take extraordinary measures to protect myself. And if you're buying a Nexus device, then you're covered, because Google, just like Apple, you know, keeps that up to date, and you get your updates directly from Google, and I don't have to wait on T-Mobile or whoever made the phone. But if you don't, then you've got issues. So it is a big problem for them.
Wow. Well, they're also doing some stuff right with Chromebooks. I was very pleased to see this. That Google Chromebooks have become the most popular classroom computing device. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that tablets aren't great and iPads and in education and all that, but it's the cloud-based access to files that's one of the things that's huge.
Yeah, well, it's too bad that Phil had to jump off because the Lakeville schools here a couple years ago switched from their kind of antiquated email system to Google. And so every student, including students down in elementary school, have a Google account. So Chromebooks are really, you know, they're no-brainer if the school is using the Google Apps environment.
Yeah.
For, you know, for creating documents and sharing things. So
what do they have to pay for them?
Pay for what?
What do they have to pay per device? You know?
I don't know how much they pay, but, you know, Google Apps for Business is $50 a head. I'm sure in the school environment, it's probably much less than that.
Yeah.
You know, but the Chromebooks, they go for a couple $100. So probably in volume, they're probably paying closer to 150.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, what kind of a volume break they might get, special break.
Well, and also the things that educators have been finding is that the Chromebooks stay relevant for a much longer period of time than other technology.
Yep.
Because it's all web-based. You know, and Google can update Chromebook, the Chrome OS, easily, and so.
Yeah, well, the iPads that the school down here got a few years ago, they're still using them. They're all iPad 2s, and they're completely locked down, so you can't actually add applications or anything to them. So that makes them much less useful than something that's always kept up to date. And the reason they're locked down is for security.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Chromebooks, Google just pushes patches and they keep things up to date. And, you know, it's even compatible to run Flash videos, but it's safe because Google, you know, continually updates that. So it makes the Chromebooks a really good school technology, I think, because it's inexpensive, it works well, and it provides students with real world kind of skills, you know, what they're going to need in the real world.
Yep.
So how do they block sites?
Oh, they do that at the router level.
Yeah, they do that. They mm-hmm. have the subscriptions for specifically for K-12 education.
Yep.
Well, the last big story, and then we'll get into a easy security tip, but is this People, P-E-E-P-L-E app.
Oh, God.
Which is a Yelp for people. And so you can go in and rate people and make comments, and you can essentially review people. And I thought, oh, my God, seriously?
Yeah, this is the worst idea ever.
It is. I don't give this thing any hope.
Oh, man.
No, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this can be used for trolling, like, to the epic degree.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Someone doesn't like you, Steve, and they can go in and, oh, Steve's an idiot, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and people are not going to put something in there unless they have to. I mean, if you have an actual name. Well, yeah, but they're going to go in, you know, people will do it just to be mean. You know, they're not going to go in there and say, oh, they're so wonderful and blah, blah, blah. That's one of the reasons that I like Angie's List. My wife signed up for this some time ago, and we found our house painter there.
Yeah.
And it was based on all the reviews. But there are actual humans, and there were two that we knew and called them, and they said, you know, both of them said, absolutely, this company's great. But you're attaching your real name to the review.
Right.
And so this People is, has an anonymity factor as well. And I thought, no.
Crazy. Do you believe some VC actually gave, you know, funded this thing? I can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
I could just see the pitch. It's like Yelp, but for people.
Yeah, that's kind of it, you know.
All right, Steve, open the door.
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right. Well, this is an easy one. And so if you're running OS X, there's now a new, it's not new, it's been disclosed. There's a simple exploit which completely bypasses Mac's OS X's malware gatekeeper. And so, you know, in the settings, in system settings, the default is to use gatekeeper, and there's a way to bypass that. And you know, there's man in the middle attacks, so that they can actually let you download a different one and so on. And anyway, the punchline is only install from the Mac App Store unless you know exactly what you're doing. I mean, don't just download DMGs, the disk image files, and open them and install stuff unless you're absolutely positive that it came from that company. And so the real way, easy way to stay safe is only download apps from the Mac App Store.
Well, I wish that would be something that I could do all the time. But there are a few apps that don't do the App Store because of there's no way to do upgrade pricing.
Yep.
And so some of the apps that I use a lot are not in the App Store. So, but they are the approved developer. So if you have that on that setting in the middle between all access and just App Store, there's a one in the middle of that which is like App Store and approved developers.
Yep.
That's the one I have mine on, so that I can do these apps that aren't in the App Store for whatever reason.
Right.
So. But it's still a good tip.
All right. Well, let's segue to the cool thing of the week. And Phil was going to, his cool thing was the BuzzFeed news app for Android.
Yep.
So they have one for iOS, and it just came out with Android. But Tim, what's yours?
So I just wanted to jibe on Phil's for a minute. I've been on the beta for this for a while. So it's the BuzzFeed app, news app.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I look at it every day. It gives you a very small bite-sized view of what's going on. And it works. And, you know, they've come a long way since I got on the beta about a month or two ago. So it's good to see that it's out and available. And it is free. So there's that. But my cool thing of the week is the Google Pixel C, which is their premium high-end Android tablet. It's you know, comes with the option to do $150, I think, really nice looking metal keyboard that looks like a regular laptop keyboard that also doubles as a case and a charger. So if you put this thing onto the actual tablet, it will charge the keyboard from the tablet. So it's just a natural thing to always keep your keyboard battery topped up and use it as a very hard case. So this looks like it's not something for now, but I think in 6 months to a year when Android 7 comes out or is announced, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things. And I can see where they're going to do a converged version of Android that will have a version of Chrome that will be equivalent to the Chromebook version of Chrome, which is basically the desktop version of Chrome.
Yeah.
So I think that's the trajectory that they're on. And they'll need a productivity-based tablet to showcase it. And I believe it's this Pixel C.
And what's the price point?
It starts at like $500. And then you have to add your $150. So about $650 is the minimum. And it goes up from there. And you'll probably want to add the extra, I think it's $100 to get more, you know, more RAM space.
Yeah. Well, so do they have expansion slots in this for an SD card?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
So it's just you have to buy whatever storage that you want.
Yeah.
So it's not out yet. It's just been announced. But I think it will be a very interesting product to take a look at in the future.
They're going up market. They're trying to get some of that Apple mojo.
They are. it's kind of ballsy to come out with a $500 tablet.
Yeah, it is.
If you're not Apple.
That's right.
Graham, what's your cool thing?
Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm always looking for a cool gadget, you know, like anybody, but I'm thinking, why can't an event be a cool thing of the week? And actually, it's a cool thing of next week, because I'm headed out to the Pioneer Summit in Redwood City, which is going to be epic. I mean, you talk about a gathering of the stars of Silicon Valley. I don't know. I hadn't heard about this thing, I don't think. I'm pretty sure it's neither. Happened. I think it might have happened last year, but it's put on by GSV Labs, which is kind of an incubator sort of a place in Redwood City, and it's being held there. It's a big place. And I got a press pass. This thing is actually run, I believe it, the GSV Labs is run by Michael Moe and his brother, Mark Moe. And Mark actually still lives here. These are former investment bankers who've both been active out in the Valley for a long time. But GSV Labs is a pretty big deal. But, I mean, take a look at the speakers. I mean, my gosh, CEOs and VCs and, you know.
Oh, it's very impressive.
You talk about name dropping. You know, Ron Johnson's going to be there, Bill Campbell, you know, Larry Sonsini, you know, Guy Kawasaki. I mean, it just, the list goes on and on. They've got so darn many speakers, it takes a long time to scroll down through this whole list. But they've got.
I'll get about 10 minutes.
I don't know. Well, you know, what they do is panels. So a lot of these, you know, would be four at a time on a panel. But this thing goes on for 3 days, you know. So it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I'm doing three nights at the Sofitel at Redwood Shores there by Oracle. Talk about a pricey hotel tab. But anyway.
You just sold the Woody, so you got all kinds of cash.
Hey, there you go. Bought it low and sold high, baby.
That's right.
No, I'm not spending that money. I'm actually going on Mini Analytics Dime. As a board member of Mini Analytics, I get to attend a couple events a year, and I picked this one. There's a couple of really high-profile health care startup CEOs speaking. Ann Wasicki from 23andMe, and this guy that co-founded Clover Health that just raised like $100 million or something. Chris Gale is his name. So that'll be interesting to hear about that in light of our upcoming Mini Analytics Life Sciences event.
Right.
So, I'm gonna be tweeting. You know. Oh, and one thing I learned, Steve, not to ramble on too long here, but on that podcast I listened to, you remember Scribble Live?
Sure.
I may go back to live blogging on Scribble. I hadn't heard of that thing in ages. I didn't even know if it was still around. They just raised $35 million VC.
Well, you know, there's a plugin for WordPress called LiveBlog that's actually done by Automattic, and you could add it to your blog.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. Okay, now we're talking. Because I probably need to do more than Twitter at this thing.
Yeah.
You know? So it'll be fun.
Cool. Well, my cool thing of the week is something that just got posted yesterday or just announced yesterday. There are 8,400 high-resolution images of the Apollo missions, NASA's Apollo missions, at Flickr.
Oh.
And I got to tell you, it is just, you know, there are these iconic images that I've seen so many different times in magazines and, you know, documentaries over the years and so on. And to see the actual high-resolution image and being able to zoom into it and so on is pretty awesome. And I thought it was great. And, of course, it was all done on a soundstage.
That's right, Stanley Kubrick.
That's right. Anyway, I'm kidding. But it's
of course
pretty
it
great.
Wasn't.
Yeah.
There's a guy on YouTube, as there are, that have these videos that say, you know, oh, here's how it was done. And this guy, he has a video and he says, there's no way that Kubrick could have done this because technologically at that time they didn't have the technology to do what that was. So they had to go to the moon to do this.
That's funny.
You got to do what you got to do, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think we pretty much covered all the upcoming events. I know IoT Hack Day is October 17th. It's coming close.
It is.
And
LED costumes. Yeah, baby.
Yeah. What's yours going to be, Graham? Oh, you're not doing one. Okay.
I don't think so. All right. No.
Yeah, he's going to do the one-piece swimsuit with all the lights on it.
Yeah.
The Minovate one-piece swimsuit.
Right. Well, I guess we will...
Don't even want to go there.
No.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll talk to everybody next week on...
The Minovate Gang Podcast.
We will continue the adventure. Take care. Indeed.
Yep.
See ya.